Hello and welcome to Required Reading, the podcast that revisits the most impactful books from our childhood. I'm your host, Erin Bold. I am a writer, actor, and comedian. Today's episode, we are doing a movie. I think it's the second time we've done that. And our guest today is one of my loveliest friends. We went to college together, Kristen Campbell. She is a writer originally from Pensacola, Florida, having dabbled in everything from audio drama to creative nonfiction to television. She is currently the showrunner's assistant on The Mighty Nein, an animated series based on the Critical Role Dungeons and Dragons campaign at Titmouse in Los Angeles. Hello!
Hi.
Our movie today is from 1982 from Rankin and Bass, The Last Unicorn. This was only the second time I saw this movie. I'm so excited to talk about this with you because I didn't remember it really clearly from the first time, but this time I was like, oh, this makes perfect sense, knowing you. This makes perfect sense. So,
Absolutely.
what's your story with this movie? How did it first come into your life?
Yeah, so I know that it had to have been through I have a half brother who is about 10 years older than me, and we did not live together growing up. We lived in different states, but I had like some of his like hand-me-down type stuff, and I think this was one of those things. I think it was just a VHS that he had when he was a kid, because this did come out, like I was born in 94, this came out quite a bit earlier. So I think it was just like one of his old movies, and that was like around the house, and I watched it as a kid and was like, oh, like unicorns are real, like this is it. So
Yes.
it was just one of those things that was like always on repeat as a kid, and then just stuck with me as an adult, and I feel like it's still an enjoyable movie.
Yeah. It's from, or rather, it follows the story of a unicorn who discovers she is the last of her kind and goes looking for what happened to the rest of the unicorns. Where are they? Incredible cast, Mia Farrow, Alan Arkin, which blew
Yeah,
my mind because
I
the cast
know.
is list it's it, the
It's
cast is
stacked.
listed. Exactly. Cast is listed in alphabetical order, so Alan Arkin comes up, and I have such a clear idea of Alan Arkin as this like crotchety old man. So the fact that he's like voicing Schmendrick, this young wizard who comes along with the unicorn for most of her journey, I was like, what on earth? And then I started listening to it really, really carefully. And Jeff Bridges is it? Christopher Lee? From Lord of the Rings, which we've talked about a lot, loving Lord of the Rings, and both of us came to it fairly recently. So also this is absolutely gorgeous. I think most people know Rankin and Bass for like Christmas Claymation, which I also did not grow up with. I only recently got into them and I'm obsessed
Oh,
with
see,
them.
I did. I grew up with that as well. So Rankin and Bass has been with me for a while.
I know my, like, I grew up with so much claymation through Aardman Studios, through Wallace and Gromit, and like all of their stuff. And see, you're like shaking your head that, exactly. I feel like people are very polarized because my family was always like, Rankin and Bass is so creepy and weird and unsettling, where a lot of people will be the opposite about Aardman.
Yeah, with Aardman, there was something about that animation style that like made me feel so like deeply uncomfortable, and I like could not
Yes.
explain to you why, but
Wallace and Gromit is so dear to my heart, but there are, like, I had a VHS of some of shorts, and the shorts are very weird and uncomfortable. There was one called Not Without My Handbag, where a little girl's aunt comes back from hell to get her handbag, and it's still terrifying, traumatizing, horrifying.
incredible.
But watching this, I was automatically reminded of a short that you had written years ago about, I think it's girls buying fruit, like a traveling goblin market.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, oh, the texture is identical. Like, so clear, so delicious and lush. Oh, like watching it, I was like, oh my gosh, this makes perfect sense. I loved it.
Yeah, I love that like dark fantasy vibe, for sure. Ever since I was a kid, like whether it's The Last Unicorn or something like The Dark Crystal, Labyrinth, all that stuff. Yeah, I was like very into the darker side of things.
What do you think drew you to that? Like, what do you think made that aspect of it resonate with you? Because it is really dark and kind of unsettling. Yeah.
I think that as a kid, especially, everything that you're experiencing is new and like can be so scary. And I think I liked when kids' movies and kids' media like took that scariness like very seriously and kind of like played up on some of those fears that you have as a kid and really like looked in on them and like made you uncomfortable and made you question things and made you think about them instead of, you know, it just being this like, oh, this nice fairy tale and we get to like forget about all of our problems. I think I liked like being taken seriously as a kid. And that's what it felt like.
I was really startled from the very beginning. There's this deep, like, kind of loneliness about being the last of your kind that I know we're both only children, and I felt so deeply lonely growing up. And I just wondered if that, I mean, we've talked a lot about your hometown feeling very isolating. And I think there's this idea, like, so prevalently in the film of like leaving the unicorn can't leave her forest, and like leaving the forest makes her kind of mortal. And I just felt like that was so. I kind of wanted to talk about like loneliness and this search for belonging because she is looking for a lost community. And what if you don't have to be alone?
Oh, that's really interesting. I didn't think about it that way before, but maybe learning some things about myself today. Yeah, no, I mean, I think that, yeah, there is this sense of like, you know, having this main character who is obviously different, out of place, that like that yeah, like needs to find her community, which I think in a lot of the ways, you know, in a lot of ways, you know, I had to set out and do that as well. I think I always tell people that The Last Unicorn is a lesbian movie, and like there are gay undertones. There's a lot of people who also like talk about it as like a trans story as well. But for me, I think yeah, I like it's lonely to be like a gay kid and conservative, you know, even if that's not something you, that you realize at the time, like when you're really young. You know that you're different and you don't feel like there's anyone really around you. And sometimes you gotta make an effort to go find those people.
I was really struck by this element of when the unicorn leaves the forest and interacts with like non-magically touched people. She just appears as like a pretty white horse. And I felt like that was so. I just was at book club talking about All Four is by Miranda July. And so much of that book is about like feeling like yourself is inherently like unknowable to the world around you. I think
For
that's such a
sure.
thing in in childhood and feeling again like those themes of isolation, which I think is so interesting. That something that comes up in the podcast a lot is like everyone is actually going through very, very similar experiences, but childhood is so isolating that you feel like no one else in the world has ever gone through this.
Yeah, that feeling of like, oh, nobody like understands like the real me. Like I like in putting up this front of like, oh, like I'm just a horse, but like inside I'm really a beautiful unicorn.
Exactly. And I like this idea of it possibly being sort of read as a narrative for transness. I am a big Wizard of Oz fan, and in the second book, they introduce this big element that can really, really read as trans, but that book came out in like 1902 or something. So obviously not the original intent. But she is turned into a human in the last like third-ish, and that's so beautiful. And I think like as soon as it happens, she's like, she like shouts out. She's like, I can feel like the pain of mortality already, which is such a crazy thing in a
She
kid's
says,
movie.
she says, I can feel my body dying all around me.
Yes. Wild. Absolutely crazy. And then there's, I was surprised by how funny it was. Surprisingly, like witty and these little, I think I really, in my sense of comedy, really like just like little muttered away lines that are so funny. I think that has, it has such an interesting sense of comedy.
And something that I think you can like appreciate as an adult as well. And I think that, you know, a lot of the themes that the movie explores, you know, are something that, you know, you take something different out of it. Whether you're a kid or an adult, like you have adult characters in the movie, like Molly Grew, and then Schmiedrick is kind of like this more of like a young adult character who's like trying to figure shit out. So I think like no matter the time that you come to this film, there's someone different to relate to.
Definitely there it is kind of like whatever season of your life you're in, you're gonna find it. Because Schmendrick is trying to be a wizard, trying to sort of figure out and how to kind of control those powers. And that's a very like trying to understand the self and how do you, different people kind of grasp you as concepts. Yeah. I hadn't thought of it that way.
I think like Schmiedrick especially, there's something in him like inherently magical, but he hasn't quite figured out the right way to control that yet. And all these other people are like, oh, this stupid fucking magician like doesn't know what the fuck he's doing. But he's like, really just like trying his best. And like he makes mistakes, he makes huge mistakes. And even when like he turns the unicorn into a human, even though that may have been the right thing to do, I mean, she's miserable because of it, and he has to live with that. So it's, I love movies where characters make mistakes and do all these things that they regret.
Yeah, there's a wild scene where he, I think, accidentally turns a tree into like a sentient being, and
Oh,
she has
yeah. Yeah, she
giant
has giant
boobs.
titties. Yeah. What's
One.
interesting about the boob tree is that, yeah, it's like you look at it one way and she is a tree with giant tits. And if you look at it another way, it does just look like a cock and balls. So it's really up to interpretation. It's interesting like to see like that level of like sexuality like in a children's movie, which like would not fly today at all.
And it feels kind of like isolated to just that kind of scene. It almost reminds me of like, are you familiar with the story that there was like originally a gay sex scene written into Good Will Hunting as sort of
No.
like a blip? So the story, and maybe it's apocryphal, is that like Ben Affleck and Matt Damon, had this Good Will Hunting script. They're sending it around, and they put a completely out of left field, doesn't make any sense, gay sex scene in the middle of it, just to be like, is anyone actually reading this script? Like, is anyone actually like, so as awful. I think the story is that Harvey Weinstein, awful garbage bag person, was like, why is there this gay sex scene in the middle of this really good script? And they're like, oh, well, damn, maybe you're the right person for this script. So I really wonder if there's like some crazy backstory behind that scene or just
I'm
something
sure
wild.
there
And
has
I
to
know
be.
a lot of the animators, I think, went on to work for Studio Ghibli. I
Oh,
don't know.
okay.
And then I think there's like two more things that really struck me. There's this persistent thing of they have to find the Red Bull, who is like
Yes.
responsible somehow and tied up with the missing unicorns. I did some digging. The energy drink had not happened yet,
No.
but it was shortly after. And if
Is
you are interested,
it really?
yes, it's like within the 80s, within I think 5 years. And the history of Red Bull is that it was like a drink that like Thai construction workers loved and ended up coming to the US, but I have no
Wow.
idea how the
Okay.
name came in. Yeah. No idea.
There was a big Last Unicorn fan who
Yeah. Oh my
made this
gosh.
decision.
But they come to this King Haggard at the end, who is sort of like has this falling apart world. And his big thing is like, I'm not keeping anything that doesn't make me happy, which is just such an interesting concept, I think, again, like to be tucked into a children's movie.
Yeah, you have this old character who wants to hold on to control so bad and wants to control these things that he thinks are beautiful, but ultimately that doesn't make him happy. And his world is still falling
No.
apart and his castle is crumbling. And like that is his downfall, literally. The castle
Yeah.
falls.
He has the walls as like the unicorn stampede out of the
Such a
ocean.
beautiful scene.
It
As a
is.
child, like even like now, I just like my heart like soars, like just like watching the unicorns like come out of the ocean. So beautiful.
Yeah. And there's something really kind of wonderful about this showdown between the last unicorn and the Red Bull. This like hulking kind of red and angry mass to this like very delicate, inherently feminine, wispy kind of unicorn. And then it's like a thing of like all of the unicorns band together and come together to
Yes.
banish this, which is
Yeah.
so.
Yeah, it feels like There's so much in this that I feel like we don't get out of a lot of like Western animation in general, and especially like now, this sense of instead of like individualism, this idea of like collectivism and coming together and finding community, and also like, in the end, like during her time as a human in the castle, she kind of forms this relationship with Prince Lear, and then at the end, I feel like if this were a movie being made by like Disney today, she would still have this, whole thing where she like saves her people and like she's a powerful woman, but she would end up with Prince Lear at the end, She'd be like, I found
Absolutely.
love. And what I really, really love about this film is that that's not the way it goes. So she's like, you're a nice guy, but like, I gotta go.
Yeah.
So it's,
Which
I just wish that we would see that more.
absolutely. Which is so interesting because I know, like, in the aughts, especially in like the early teens, because I don't think Frozen came out maybe like 2012, but there was such this narrative of like strong female characters, and you have this thing in 82 that is exactly that, and like turning down, because watching it, I like it's absolutely a thing of like, oh, I know where this is gonna go, and it doesn't, and that's so nice. Yeah, that was so cool. And then there's this final moment where she's going back to the forest to live with the unicorns, to like immortality. And she says something like, I'm the only unicorn who understands regret. And I feel like that is such an odd, like bittersweet kind of note to it. And it's sort of like, what is that regret? I don't know what it lands on.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. Yeah, because she is the only unicorn that's been able to experience human emotions, which is, wrapped up in so many, good and bad things, I think, and that are very complicated. And to, she's the only unicorn that has been able to regret, but I think in a way, that's also being like the only unicorn that has like been able to like desire in a way that a human does, and been able to just understand human emotions in a way that an immortal unicorn doesn't.
I feel like it's this interesting kind of not quite loose end, but it feels very anti. It feels like the antithesis to that sort of very typical kind of Disney narrative. Definitely.
Yeah, it's very bittersweet. It doesn't really end on this completely happy note, I guess.
I was very surprised that Schmendrick and Molly do end up together. I thought she was like a grandmother kind of
Do they end up
age.
together?
It is based on a book,
Yeah,
and the
I've read the
screenplay
book.
is written by the same author. Yeah, let's talk about that a little bit. How did that come into your life?
So I read the book. I mean, I didn't know it was a book for a long time until like middle school. And then I think I read it in about like eighth grade or something. And from what I remember, it's fairly similar to the movie. I think because, yeah, like Peter S. Beagle also had such a heavy hand in the script as well. So yeah, but I mean, I remember enjoying it. But I think like first and foremost, like the movie is like what stands out in my mind, which is why like I wanted to come here today and more so talk about the movie, because it's what I've have, have an experience of watching over and over and over again, more so than the book. But yeah, but I have read the book and it is lovely. I think, it is, if you're into like fantasy literature, it is like a classic piece of fantasy literature. But outside of that, I don't think many people know about it.
And I feel like not many people, I know this is like a revered film, and maybe it's like an age group thing, but I don't feel like this gets talked about a lot. Like it felt not quite undiscovered, but it felt very not cult classic, but sort of under the radar.
Yes, one for the weird kids, I think. Yeah, I remember, because it was funny, because I remember growing up and like because it was such like a seminal movie in my life, I just like thought that everyone had seen this fucking movie. And when I would reference it, like people would have no idea what the fuck I was talking about. So I forced friends into watching this film, and usually the response is like, I don't get it, but I'm like, I'm so glad you like this, Kristen. I like don't understand, but I'm like, okay, that's fine. I do feel that like coming into it as an adult is a little bit different than
For
if it
sure,
was something
even.
that you grew up with. So I understand.
It It's so like surprisingly wistful, and throughout all of it, there's a lot of shots of her just looking over mountains and fields and plains, and
Yeah.
that one
This
song playing in the back.
yeah, exactly. Yeah, these like beautiful like landscapes of her just like, I mean, I was very much like that as a child, like just, when you're in the car and you're just like looking out the window for like, on family road trips, and you could just be silent for like 6 hours and just look out the window. I mean, that was very much me as a kid. So yeah, I mean, I think there's this sense of like yearning and discovering the world and like going on this adventure. It's really lovely.
Yeah. What do you think are some of the what are some of the things that like your perspective maybe has changed on, or like some of the big surprises revisiting it as an adult?
I mean, one, I think it holds up pretty well for the most part, which, is kind of a surprise. I think that as an adult, I definitely think more about colonialism.
Say more about that. Yeah.
I mean, I think like it, you have this magical land that is filled with unicorns, and then, a king comes and says, actually, I want all these unicorns for myself, and I want this place, and I want these things because I think that's what makes me happy, and I need to control it. And literally takes an entire species or like ethnic
True.
group, let's say, and then
Valid.
forces them into a place that they are not from, where they are trapped. I mean, that is
When you put it
colonialism.
like that.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Because
So,
I read it as like conservationism and like, it's
oh,
the 80s and you've got like
interesting.
Silent Spring. Yeah. And so like going extinct, but you're absolutely right. And I think those things go together. You're like coming into an unnatural landscape, and ooh, that's really
Yeah,
interesting.
and also by like the elimination of these people and removing them from their land, like it is like an ecological disaster because you don't have these caretakers anymore. I mean, these unicorns that were a part of the land are now no longer there to take care of it. So yeah, it's all connected.
Damn.
Yeah, the last unicorn goes
My
deep,
good.
y'all.
It really does. Oh man.
Don't know. I think just like thinking about like why did some of these darker things like intrigue me so much as a child? I was really into that like midnight carnival, which I also wrote a script about
That's
a while ago.
true.
I wrote had like a whole midnight carnival thing that I wrote into a script, but it was like very much inspired by this like crazy dark carnival with Mommy Fortuna running the show, who's just like this crone witch woman who like her character design looks so fucking cool,
Yeah.
and also like this harpy that she keeps in a cage that the unicorn like decides to let go even though it's going to kill her. And I think that stuck out to me too, like rewatching it as an adult, this idea that this unicorn has this morality in place where regardless of what it means for her, she really like she doesn't believe that people belong in cages. And she sees this creature, especially like it, and all the creatures of this circus, but especially the harpy that is, I think she like calls us like a sister to her, like they are both immortal creatures. And even though this harpy has sort of like a more this intent to kill, this violence about her, the unicorn still sets her free and is like, you don't belong here.
It was a really beautiful moment. Yeah. And there's something so interesting about that character, Mommy Fortuna, I mean, played to bits by Angela Lansbury, where she, her one little thing is like, even when you escape, even though I'm gonna die, I caught you. And you're always gonna, you immortal being, are always gonna know that you were bested by this thing. Like she gets killed by the harpy and she's like screaming and cackling of like, I still got you. You still have to live with that.
Exactly. And
That was
it's interesting
wild.
how that also like mirrors Haggard as well in kind of a different way, and how they're both feel this need to control and how it's both of their downfalls.
Yeah, interesting. Delicious. And the harpy does have titties as well.
Yeah, huge, yeah, some saggy titties, yeah.
And there's three. Yeah, God bless.
Lots of tits in this one, guys.
Tune in.
Tune in.
Oh, man. Well, I guess then we've come to the final question. Would you consider it required reading or required viewing?
I think so. If you're my friend, yes, absolutely. I will force you to watch it at some point in your life. I mean, I think for definitely for people who are fans of fantasy, who are writers of fantasy, and genre, I would say it's required. I think it's a classic. I think it's doing a lot of things that are not being done today that maybe we should do more of, especially in the realm of like children's media. I think it's a really interesting watch. Just really understand and know like how much children can actually handle, you know? So I would say overall, yes.
Yeah, I like it. I like that it is like I very much grew up in Beauty and the Beast was my thing. And this felt like so radically different and just like even if, you know, I don't think if I had it as a kid it would fall into like my permanent rotation, but you need it. You need that variety. Yeah.
Something to like get you out of your comfort zone a little bit is always good, I think.
Absolutely. Yeah, kids can be a little scared. Life is scary. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, then, where would you like to be found if you would like to be found? Any plugs?
Yeah, you can follow me on Instagram at Kristen Camp, CHRISTINCAMP. Otherwise, I'm not really like I have other social media accounts, but I don't really use them. So I am also on Blue Sky at Kristen Camp as well, but I have not posted anything yet. Maybe I will one day. We'll see.
Check out the Mighty Nein. Yeah.
Yeah, and check out the Mighty Nein coming out at some point on Amazon.
Event.
It's gonna be really great. I'm super excited.
Yeah. So I'm gonna stop the recording.
Bye.
Thank you, Kristen. This one is actually one of my faves. It's short and sweet, and I don't know, it's very heartwarming. And I love Kristen's voice, don't you? Oh my gosh. So next week, we have a returning guest, Zanna Shorer, who did our Tale of Emily Windsnap episode. They are back to discuss Fablehaven by Brandon Mull. And to say that this book is a wild ride is drastically insufficient. So I'll see you then. You can find me everywhere at Erin R. Bowles. And if you would like to support the podcast, thank you so much. Oh my gosh. You can go to buymeacoffee.com/required reading. I'll see you next week.